Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a great show. It is dealing with some current events and, unfortunately, some predicted things from some time ago, maybe even very long time ago. And I thought today's show would be properly titled, A Time for the Brave of Heart and One in Soul. Now, that sounds a little poetic for this kind of broadcast, but not necessarily so. And I hope that it will be something that each of you will be able to identify with. And interestingly, I've got to ask one of my assistants here that I had a poem. I think it's on somewhere in the other room there. And it's a poem by Chief Tecumseh. I want to read it to you. I'll read it in about 5 minutes, actually, after I, as I usually do, define some of the areas of discussion today. But I love this poem. It's one of my favorite poems. As a matter of fact, in the office where I sometimes am at, that poem has been given out to everybody because it's like the official poem of the office. And it's a great kind of, we'll say, way of looking at life. And this is a time for all of us to be looking at life, maybe in some new ways that will be helpful and that will allow us to be able to, we'll say, weather the storm. Now, I've talked about the storm coming. It really has to do with the change in the esoteric framework or energies that construct the universe. The creator, God, decided that our universe would be a physical one in part, and it has a spiritual side, but nonetheless, even though it has a spiritual side, it is, in fact, a physical universe. And the physicality of this universe actually makes it a place where there's a lot of forces, because force is one type of energy moving against another. And it could be another of the same type or even more dramatically producing force of a different kind in some circumstances. But the point is that this is the very nature of where we, especially human beings, have to create more of both ourselves and our Creator. And, of course, tonight's show, like all shows, is about why life is, and the very foundation of that question is that the Creator of this universe seeks to have life, its own creation, be a co-creator, and to participate in both self-creation, which is what the Creator did, and of creation of more of the universe, which in part is more of life and more of God itself. Now, some people frown at that and think that God is stationary or a being that has no change. Well, if that were true, then everything would be deterministic, and those folks usually believe that. They actually believe in a totally deterministic outcome of everything. But what could be more boring? Why would someone create or something create something that has no possibility of growth and no possibility, therefore, of self-creation? And that would be a universe in which it would be difficult to even define God, much less us. Okay, so with all that in hand, and thinking about some of the issues that are so intricately involved tonight, I want you to consider the following. We are in a period of dramatic change. The dramatic change is the types of energy that are imposing. There's four kinds out of seven. At the present time, their existence, so to speak, on living things that compose, in effect, four dynamically changing senses within the human being out of seven senses. Now, you may know of five, but there are two that are spiritual. The spiritual senses come from the heart, the heart chakra, and the heart center, or chakra, helps us to understand God. And when it's conscious, when it has some ability to understand anything because of its sense. Sense gives awareness. We take the awareness and develop consciousness with it. And the head chakra, which is the other center that human beings have, is a center that tells us or explains to us, but also gives us the ability to co-create more of God. So we sense how we can create more of God, and then we actually do so using the information supplied from that center. Centers supply information. We can embellish that information with consciousness. We take the combined information of our centers and produce knowledge. But knowledge alone cannot be creative. The creative side comes from consciousness. So interestingly, we have, human beings have, two centers with consciousness called the heart and crown that animals and other species below us do not. So they don't understand God, and they aren't even aware it exists in reality, and they certainly don't understand how to create more of God. So they do love, and they have other virtuous sides to them, which are expressions in a subconscious way, or below consciousness, of God. But on a conscious scale, they don't do that. That's what makes us human and special, and different from animals, regardless of whether you're an evolutionary biologist or not. It doesn't matter, because that definition clearly separates human beings from those that are not human. You need metaphysics, though, to explain that, not physics or biology. And the metaphysics is more than apparent. It can be proven in a number of ways, which we won't go into tonight, but we have many other shows. So certainly listen to some of those earlier shows, and it'll help you to understand that. Okay, so looking at it from a standpoint, that heart is a huge issue, because the heart chakra is the chakra that gives us an understanding of godly or virtuous things. And the crown chakra, which is the connection between us and our soul, as well as being created with God, literally becomes active when we choose to co-create, meaning with others, and in this case, others who are functioning as a soul or godly, or with God. It could be the same statement, virtually. And when we co-create in that way, then we truly are one with our heart and with our, we'll call it crown. Now, some people will call it, well, isn't that your mind? Well, the higher mind, where the soul exists, yes. The lower mind, no. But those are two different things, and I won't get too finicky tonight, because I'm talking about things with a broad brush, and not to define all kinds of, we'll call it scientific and metaphysical with physics and all the other science stuff I usually talk about. I think tonight we won't go that far into it. Let me read for you this poem by Chief Tecumseh. Now, you may have heard the name Tecumseh in reference to a general named Sherman and others that have taken this name. Tecumseh means the one, this is not going to be so surprising, the one with the, that is one in soul and heart. So tonight's show is in honor of Chief Tecumseh. And I will read now for you his poem, which I'm going to read again before tonight's show ends, so that you can listen to it in two different ways, before and after the show. Well, at the end of the show. so that you can see if it makes a difference to you, having heard it the first time compared to the second. So live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart. Trouble no one about their religion. Respect others in their view and demand that they respect yours. Love your life. Perfect your life. Beautify all things in your life. Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. Prepare a noble death song for the day when you go over the great divide. Always give a word or a sign of salute when meeting or passing a friend, even a stranger, when in a lonely place. Show respect to all people and grovel to none. When you arise in the morning, give thanks for the food and for the joy of living. If you see no reason for giving thanks, the fault lies only in yourself. Abuse no one and no thing, for abuse turns the wise ones to fools and robs the spirit of its vision. When it comes your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death, so that when your time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives over again in a different way. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home. Okay, that poem, to me, brings about a number of, we'll say, both emotive issues, but more importantly, higher mind issues that touch into the soul itself. In looking at the purpose of life, it is not to achieve some goal outside of God. It's not to overcome fear by giving into it. And it's never to provide the destruction of life to anyone or anything, even if you seek to protect yourself or fear of some nature within yourself. It can't come from those things. Life is a beautiful thing. And each of us has the opportunity to take this beauty and to create something even greater. In order for something to be greater in beauty, it must increase or enhance the senses of all those who can sense it at any level. And this is the virtue of beauty. It raises the awareness of others, which eventually allows them to increase their consciousness if they so choose. When we deal with forceful issues, as I discussed at the beginning of the show, because we have come to live as human beings, an extension of our soul, in a world of great force, because this is the dense physical world, the most forceful of the three worlds that humans live some level of life in. When we live in this world, we live within these forces, and our goal is to reduce the force for those who live in light or live within, we'll say, within the consciousness of God, and increase, strangely, the forces for those who seek to destroy life and oftentimes to, in their folly, think they can destroy God. We call those evil people. But when that process as adhere to, this poem that I read you by Chief Tecumseh makes every bit of sense. If you do not presently live your life, this poem may not so easily ring a bell. It may even seem strange or oddly, we'll say, contradictory to what you think or believe. Now, I say that not to be judgmental, but only to say something I think comes logically, but more than logic, much more than logic, in a higher truth, how this poem is a poem of the soul itself. And that, to me, is what makes it such a great poem. There are other poems that I particularly care about. Most of them have to do with souls, or comes from a soul-like position. Now, I want to also express that these are times, starting right now, that, as has been said, try men's souls. How do they do that? They do that by allowing us to take the lower road, which oftentimes leads to darkness, and through fear and lack of fortitude of God itself within us, we settle, or worse, help to co-create the dark side in the world around us. There is a test at hand. It's a test that has been foretold for a long time. But most importantly, I've been talking about it for a long time. And the time that I have been talking about it, I have been praying that I'm wrong. This year particularly, that is true. I seek no credit for foreshadowing what is at hand and will continue to become a greater force against good. One of the things that I thought Chief Tecumseh touched upon so specifically, in an odd way, is trouble no one about their religion. Respect others in their view and demand that they respect yours. We are, at the present moment, as I speak to you right now, in a world in which the opposite is true. There are many people, in potentially the hundreds of millions, over 100 million in any rate, according to statistical issues, who do not follow that viewpoint. They may demand that others respect their religion, but they have no respect for differing religions or differing views or differing thought. And worse than that, they seek to destroy the life of those that believe and or practice viewpoints in religion and or in many other practices that are different from their own. Now, for eons, this has been an issue with human beings. But human beings as they are today have reached this point in what is known as an equilibrium between their thought in egotism and their emotional feeling in terms of, we'll say, gross desires, or sometimes referred to as fixed desires within their astral or emotional system. The two are about the same. right now, in this year, as I speak to you, 2012. Now, isn't that odd? Why is it that it's like that? There has to be something about this time. And yes, I can explain it to you. I will do it for those who listen or read, listen to the show, or have read materials in Ageless Wisdom or in many other types of philosophies, Buddhism, and many others, that Zoroastrianism, particularly, oddly, a Persian religion of antiquity. And here is how it's explained within them. We are presently in the fifth race of humanity. The other races have ceased to exist, except in very rare circumstances. You could find someone of an earlier race in a very remote place where the people there have not evolved, so to speak. Almost impossible to find today. Not so impossible maybe 50 years or 100 years ago, but still very difficult. For the most part, almost everybody is in this fifth race of humans, but there's an oddity about it. We're not just in the fifth race, we're also in the sub-race of the fifth race. Now, what the heck does that all mean? That just means that the way we use and interpret energy to create ourselves, remember we're self-created beings, and our civilization follows the pattern of the way the energy that we're composed of and the way that there is a plethora of it around us is affecting us. And we have become highly, we'll call it mental. So mental that now we are as an equal of mentality as we are of centality. Now, the problem with that, in a sense, is that we're conflicted because our sentiment can be in conflict with our mentality. And between the two, we can come up with some very wrong understandings of God and ourselves and others. There is a part of us that is stimulated to create civilization called the throat chakra, which has to deal with the energy that literally helps us to extend our senses through the lower kingdoms. The lower kingdoms are minerals, plants, and animals, and we presently are using them more than any other race of humans ever has to create our civilization to new and amazingly advanced technologies and levels of development. This is not bad. Not in and of itself. But the conflict that's within us, the conflict of how we feel, which is exaggerated by desires, that are fixed within us and are not virtuous desires. And then by our egotism, and in some people it extends to arrogance, when it reaches the arrogant point, the sentimentality literally has joined and become one with the mentality. Wow. It's a powerful thing. And arrogance is a very, very dangerous place to be. But we'll not so much deal with that at this moment. So we have reached this point now where we're creating our civilization, sometimes representing the very conflict within us. And that very conflicted position then becomes externalized into the civilization we build. We may want to create a caliphate. What is that? A caliphate is a group of nations and cities and a large number of people, a billion plus, who demand respect of their views of Shia law and certain aspects of Islam, and further demand that all others who do or create any mission of the caliphate are infidels and ultimately enemies. That's what a caliphate is. Also, they believe that once the caliphate is created, that incorporates the majority of these billion people presently on Earth, give or take, a being, person, will come to lead these in war, but also giving the chance for the rest of the world to either join in the caliphate, to become one as a world, a unified world, or be destroyed. Okay, that's a position one could say is the extreme example of bringing together one's desires and sentiment, feelings of such strong, we'll say, fervor about, quote-unquote, their belief in God and their religion, but more about their prophet and somewhat what the interpretation is of God, to the mentality of a series of laws, a structure of understanding based upon what they conclude is virtue, but is based upon force, and the force is to change good, or God, of others, into their structure of what they believe is good. Yet we're told, and most people can figure this out for themselves, that the use of force to change the minds and feelings of others from goodness away from God is the hallmark of evil. And there's no religion, even Islam, which is very contradictory, I understand that, that states anything different from that. In other words, their own religion says the reverse of what this whole thing is of people who believe in jihad, or we'll say jihadist viewpoints. I know, this is a pretty strange show tonight, because I don't usually go to these levels to talk about these kinds of specific events. But we're in the period of time when we're all being tested about this. For those people who could understand the ideas I'm presenting tonight, they may make it through this time. They may make it through not with their life intact, but they may make it through it with their soul intact, and that's much more important. Now, I'm not suggesting that people just wantonly give up their life or something like that in a physical sense, because part of this poem says, seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. Wow. That certainly doesn't sound like you should be throwing your life away. However, it says, prepare a noble death song for the day when you go over the great divide. Now, preparing a noble death and a song, I kind of want that to be two separate issues, requires us to realize what the word nobility means. And the word nobility means that you do the very best you can in whatever circumstances you are in to co-create with God. The very best you can to create more virtue, a more lightened form within the world. That's what nobility means. So when the chief says, prepare a noble death song for the day when you go over the great divide, he's really saying the song part, he's talking about that you must express it to others. It can't be a noble death that you do in a closet. It can't be a noble death that has an invisibility to it. It must be a song so that others can hear and see and know. This is a critical issue, and it's not one to really be, we'll say, neglected, because too many people, because of their fears, may even have some nobility to their death, but they don't sing it, and they don't let others know of it, and they may shy away because of fears from the creative element involved. And they may not be noble because they may not do the best they can. They may compromise. A compromised death is very far from a noble death. A compromised death is an abomination of God. A noble death is the expression and revelation to others of God. You can see this poem has really touched me. I hope by the end of today's show, it will touch you as well. Now, why should we always give a word or a sign of salute when meeting or passing a friend, even a stranger, when in a lonely place? Well, the lonely place isn't a physical thing, in my mind. The lonely place is the place where people themselves find this poem to be threatening and fearful. They find themselves afraid and threatened by a world that is turning into a hostile, forceful place that they can either face or run from. The world as we are seeing it on the television tonight and in the next weeks or months is not a world just on an abstract, we'll say, an abstract view from our easy chair. This world is right here, if you're in the United States. I know many people who listen to the show are listening from other countries. But it doesn't matter. You can apply this to some extent to the country you're in. However, the United States has in it a particular problem because the darkness is not just over on the other side. The darkness is coming about because of a conjunctive element between the present administration in the United States and the general, we'll say, viewpoint of jihadists throughout the world. How could that be? Well, if you've listened to prior shows, I went through some of the explanations of the present president, Obama, and many of the people he has surrounded himself with. And it turns out that he is basically a semi-jihadist himself. He was raised to be that. He also is anti-American. He is a colonial or anti-colonial, depending upon how you want to infer it, communist. And he has peculiar viewpoints for America, but not so peculiar for someone living in Sudan, Yemen, Libya, or Tunisia, Egypt, Syria. Those places, Indonesia, where he came from. No, I know, he was born in the United States, but he spent most of his young years living in Indonesia, practicing as a practicing Muslim. He wasn't as radical, or his father then wasn't as radical, his adopted father, as the most radical jihadist today. But the seeds for it were. This has created within the mind and actions of our administration an opening of a lack of force against the dark side in this very, we'll call it, bizarre movement that goes against its own tenets and its own religion in the Middle East and other parts of the world, but dominating in the Middle East. The process is a process of giving up an active force of good that over time sometimes has been abused, sometimes has been really non-existent, but for most of the time has been there to try to temper through force the darkness that is there. But that darkness has, that force has been removed, and it has been for going on 4 years now. And that's just enough time to allow the fervent ferment and the fervent of people to take the initiative and to begin their construction of a caliphate, etc. They needed the support and help of a weakened America. And the active ignoring of clear signals and the literal destruction of, we'll say, forces in their own neighborhood, including and especially Israel, to prevent this from occurring. That has all been taken place now. That has been removed, and now we face a very serious but totally expected result. Now, some of you are going to say, oh, but nobody could figure out how to do this. Well, there's a number of people who knew exactly what this administration was doing years ago. If anybody watched or still was watching, Glenn Beck, he predicted it. A few other people have. But, you know, those people were pushed aside as being radicals and crazy, etc., in their day. And so it hasn't entered the consciousness of people to see how terrible it has been. We're going to talk more about this, but more about how we can change this and how this really is a time for the brave of heart and one in soul. And we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we have a relatively unusual show. We're talking about a poem that was written by Chief Tecumseh, actually created by him. And it's a poem that is one of my favorite poems. It's actually a poem we have hung up in the office I office at, and all the other people can see it, etc. Some of them may not notice it's there, I don't know. But it's something that I feel is very important because it touches on much of what is happening in the world today. I want to continue with just saying another sentence of the poem so that we can kind of draw it in as I continue to talk about some of tonight's show's topic. So, and tonight's show topic is A Time for the Brave of Heart and One in Soul. That's tonight's show topic. Show respect to all people and grovel to none. Now, that sentence, the short and sweet, to me is a real eye-opener because I think that it really shows the tension between understanding the relationship of force and goodness and evil and the process that we are in to try to overcome this nature in humanity to be caught right in the center between our sentiment, our feelings, and our mental processes. How can we show respect to all people and grovel to none? If you respect all people, then what about the ones that say, when you show this movie or when you say these words, you are showing a disrespect for us. You're disrespecting our prophet, and that means you're disrespecting God itself, and we are jihadists, and we will kill you. Isn't there a problem? Show respect to all people and grovel to none. Well, respecting all people means that you respect the people, even those that wish to kill you, even those who demand that you become like them in their darkness. And part of that respect is to not secede to their demands, but to reply with force, conviction, and bravery. And then you grovel to none. If you grovel, you show the fear that's in your heart. And if fear is in your heart, then you have lost what is necessary to understand God. Remember, the heart gives humans the ability, the heart chakra, to understand God. We cannot understand God if we grovel. Never. It's fear. As you may have recalled from other shows, fear really comes from the fear of death. Fear in general can be traced to our fear of death. If you understand who you are, what you are, and where you're going, there's no fear of death. And so you won't grovel. And then you'll be okay. It's those with the fear of death, which is the vast majority of humans today, that will grovel. And they lose the most, one of the two most critical elements immediately, and both eventually. They lose their understanding of God, and eventually their whole meaning in life goes, because they lose the ability to create more of themselves in God's image. Then they're cooked. That's it. It's not whether you live or die, we're all going to die. It's how you lived and how you died that matters. I really find this fascinating, that so many people live most of their life making almost all their decisions based upon fear. It negates the meaning that they could be deriving from co-creating with God. Their life becomes boring at best, and at worst, a disillusionment, a complete depressing banality of what is a beauty. It's unbelievable. When you arise in the morning, give thanks for the food and for the joy of living. Why should we give thanks for the food and for the joy of living? The food of living? But what is the food of the living? It's not food, is it? For the food and for the joy of living. Think about it in this respect, because this poem had such depth to it, it's hard to really gather in all of what is really being said. We are given life so that we can co-create. We're given life because the Creator chose to give a part of its own existence, in a sense. It allows us to co-create with it. And that's the opportunity for us to be self-created then. Food, in a sense, is just that. Being given the opportunity for us to grow. And then for the joy of living, well, joy comes from allowing and helping and serving others. Allowing others to serve, helping them to do so, and doing so, so that they may continue to do so themselves. That's the joy of living. Just as it says at the very beginning, it's a very important point. Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. Now, why does it say not in the service of all people? Well, some people are living against God, and the only way you can serve them is to be a force against their desire to be destructive. That's the best you can do. I know there's those that believe otherwise. They have various religions behind them in some cases. They have various philosophies. They may be called liberals. But the point is that that is not what I'm saying is right. I'm saying that in the face of darkness, you don't serve those who are dark by helping them to be darker. Never. There could be almost no crime worse than doing that. Because then you become part of the evil. Now, I know most people don't get that because we have confusions in some religious stances. Turn the other cheek. The meek shall inherit. There's confusions. The confusions don't make a lot of sense. Because the same, very same religions say things that are antithetical. So you have to use your mind. And you have to also see what the results would be going one direction or the other. Now, I am not opposed to people who choose a direction of all-encompassing givingness because that's their nature, so to speak. I just think that that nature is yet to be fully developed. Because if you give unwisely to those who are destructive, all you do is aid the dark side. There's nothing in this poem that suggests that, is there? That's a different poem entirely, believe me. And not one that I would hang on the wall. But one that I can understand. I can really understand that viewpoint. It's easier to understand than those who want the caliphate and want to destroy everyone else who isn't just like they are. Evil. All right. And then if you see no reason for giving thanks, the fault lies only in yourself. This is a very interesting thought. You know, I don't know that the thought does lie only in yourself. It certainly lies in yourself. But Chief Tecumseh thinks it lies only in yourself. Certainly, one taking responsibility for that confusion is what I think he is getting at. He's saying, take full responsibility. That I agree with. But the fault could also lie in a collective belief. Because certainly, there are many who don't give thanks, but do so in a collective, instructive way. They take, they destroy, etc. And I see the fault lying in that collective as well as in the individual. But I may be splitting hairs here. And I think the point that is made is that if each took responsibility, then each could change. On an individual level, you don't have to change the collective because this is an individual aspect of existence. Humans are both collectively part of we'll call it God, but they also are individuals. That's why communism is a sick and evil thing. Because it removes that concept. It also removes the concept of God. It says, religion is the opiate of the people. It's a destruction of society because it excuses people and it gives them the hope of something that isn't real. Only the tangible that you take from others makes You know, when I look at this and I say to myself, well, where are we going with this? Where is the next year or two going to end up? Well, I can tell you this based upon predictions. I know about the Maya and that they've got this idea and their calendar, and this is the 2000 and the 2012 and everything. The thing about it is that this was an ancient system long before the Maya. Now, I talked to you about Zoroastrianism, the Persians. That's the Iranians, folks, if you go back in their history. The Persians, in 600 B.C., predicted that this time would happen. That was long before the Mayans. So, I mean, if you look at how this process is unfolding, it's a change in the structure of this type of energy. It's called the throat chakra, or third ray type of energy, that actually developed civilization. That's been in focus on Earth for about 675 years, give or take. And when it's in focus, it's a good thing. It developed civilization. We all like civilization. It seems to be our thing. But by extending our senses and our bodies effectively into the use of other kingdoms, which is great because we can do a lot more stuff, right? We don't have to just rely upon what's us physically. The point is that we have to use this stuff for good. Some societies are, some aren't, and some it's too early to call, as you say. And this is what we're facing right now. That's the conflict, and it's the inner conflict of man, of humans, coming out through their civilization. And that's dealing with this sentimentality, the emotional part of man, being challenged by their mental side. And when the two become one, with the emotional taking the lead, it's called kama manasic thought, when that becomes the dominant type of thinking, people move readily from egotism and then into arrogance, and societies fail. Look at the people who are the leaders of the countries that are attempting to move into a caliphate, and that who the leaders are of the jihadist movement of the people who are Muslims. Those people, those Islamists, are by and large very egotistical, and the majority of the leaders are arrogant. They could care less about the lives of others. They are anti-love. They are into destruction of life itself. And they want power and control. True darkness. They want to force others to think and behave as they choose, or they will come after you. They'll blow you up. They call it terror. What is terror? Terror is the activation of fear, right? It's the use of fear through various actions taken by others. So others take actions, they cause fear in those they want to be very fearful, and we call that terrorism. That's what it is. Well, yeah, that's what they're doing. And they claim that terrorism is being used on them because others don't think and feel the way they do. That's terrorism to them. So they'll kill, blow up, burn down, or otherwise, in some way, destroy the life and civilization of anyone who isn't just like them. Wow. Terrorism is an extension of evil. It's a means to achieve a goal. I want to talk about something that's very interesting. Some people confuse movements as they took place in places of light with terrorism. I'll give you an example. This is a good one, I hope. The United States, before there was the United States, was a colony of Great Britain. And English folks said, hey, go over to this land and build a structure of a society, and you will represent us in this new land, and we will give you, effectively, the rights of a citizen of the Commonwealth, the great country of England and its other associated countries. Sounded like a pretty decent deal for a couple hundred years. A lot of people came and started a new life. Many of them were somewhat, we'll say, radical and antithetical to the generally accepted thought in England and its associated countries. Because of that, they chose a life of great, we'll call it stress and difficulty, but one in which they were freer. They wanted freedom. England agreed, you can be freer in this new country, make up most of your own social dynamic laws, provided that you have allegiance to England, or the Commonwealth of Great Britain. And at that point, in time, that deal seemed like a good deal. And nobody seemed to be really against that deal until about 1770 or so. I mean, seriously. It was a deal that lasted about 160 years or so. So it wasn't a bad deal because it lasted a long time. But there's something that has to be added into this equation, and that is that the deal was that the rights of being a member of the country of England would remain in the colonists, both while they were citizens in their own land, and as represented in Parliament in other ways in their originating country. What happened? There was an erosion. The colonies became a factory for England. They became a farm for England. They became an extension of the English system, we'll say, of exploitation, which England began to see their colonies as through an adoption of a principle called imperialism. Okay. Well, imperialism really is a bad thing. There was a time when the United States itself, for about 50 years, was imperialistic, by the way. Or 60 years or so of imperialism is what we had. Not as bad as England, but still not right. But that's a whole other story. We're going back before that. So what happened? Why is it not the same thing that the United States rebelled and said, hey, I want freedom, and we're going to do it, and blank, 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 and then they went against the principles of this deal? And well, they eventually said that they agreed to be governed by a country as long as that country kept its deal. And in several different ways, England decided not to keep its deal. England says, well, then the United States said, we're quit, more or less. It took about 5 years for them to really get to that level. But the point is that this is not the same thing. Because eventually this country, the United States, quit for higher levels of we'll call it virtue, to create more freedom for itself in the world, to be in a beacon of what freedom would be, and to fight oppression, which was happening, maybe not at the level that was necessary to be as forceful as they sometimes were. But nonetheless, at the level, at the time in history it was, necessary for the people in the United States, eventually, to the colonies, to exist one with God, or as they saw themselves, one with God. They saw that they couldn't live with God except by separation. That's fine. They didn't tell England that England had to change. They didn't tell anybody that anybody had to change. All they said is, we choose here to be free. That is not terrorism. That's simply saying, I choose to be free, and I have a God-given right to be free. And so, in my freedom, I choose to do this. Within their own country, they fought for that freedom. They didn't send battleships over to England to destroy England. Oh, there was a couple of skirmishes on the, I know about those, on the coast of England. This is silly stuff. Almost all the battles, almost everything took place in what we call the colonies, or the now United States. So the reality of the situation is that the United States used some methods that terrorists may use, but it was part of a war of freedom. This is directly the opposite of someone who's trying to get, it would be like the opposite happened. The United States said, not only are we going to do what we want to do, but England's got to do exactly what we want, or else we're going to destroy them, and we go over and start doing terrorist acts willy-nilly the way the IRA did, effectively. That's what was wrong with that proposition. It's a difficult thing. Now, that's a little different story, by the way. It's not quite the same. It's not as clear. But here it was. Terrorism is not just an act. It's not like, well, gee, you stood behind a tree and you shot somebody. That's terrorism. Or you blew something up and didn't give a warning. No. Terrorism is meant to harm others by getting them to retract their connection to God. Become so fearful that they grovel. Become so unbelievably, we'll say, connected to a position of weakness that they participate in supporting one way or another evil. What to think about that? And I'm going to just very quickly mention that if you haven't had an opportunity to go over to the Eye Center and see Dr. David Stacey and Lorraine and Christy, his assistants, and you need to have an eye exam for whatever you think is going on with your eyes, give them a try. Why? Because, and a number of people have done this now, because he is kind of unique. He doesn't just sit there for 10 minutes, give you a script and say, well, come back if you need to, but I'll charge you more. And we're not going to get this right necessarily, but that's too bad. Here's the best I can do, and goodbye. Especially if you have complex vision problems, glasses or contact lenses, go see him because he's more willing to work on trying to solve the problem. How do we know this? Because I've sent a bunch of people there. They tell me the same thing. Yeah, the guy spent hours. Well, if I say this, it isn't a matter of how much time, it's whether you got the results, but eventually he does. And it's the people that are most in need of that that have so much trouble finding somebody who will even spend more than the 10 minutes with them, right? So 2974 North Amaschool Road here in Phoenix, Arizona, of course. Of course, if you're in another state or country, find someone like Dr. Stacey. You can even email him icenter.org, and maybe he'll know someone around where you live, and even in a different country. He goes to different countries where he donates his time, a significant amount of time, for nothing. Well, for helping and serving others, but for no exchange of money. And he does this because he really wants others to see better. It's the southwest corner of Alma School and Elliott in Chandler, theicenter.org. And the phone number again, I didn't even give it today yet, 480-899-0188, 480-899-0188. Also, if you haven't tried it, I would suggest getting a bottle of Phi Chi Jizik. It's on sale. www.buyjizik.com. Yeah, you know what that is. Buyjizik.com. 602-431-5762. What does it do? Well, think of it as a super aspirin that has virtually no side effects, lasts for 8 hours, and more likely, now I'm not supposed to say this, more than likely will cure rather than just get rid of the pain, the problem. Sounds good? Give it a try. You have to take more pills, but they last longer, and they get rid of the problem in most circumstances. Sounds a lot better. It deals with chi, the energy of life, as it's going to your body, which is the first kundalini. If you don't know about that, listen to some of my shows about it, and you'll get the idea. Okay, tonight's show, A Time for the Brave of Heart and One in Soul. What do I mean by being, we talked about the brave of heart. What do I mean about being one in soul? Well, one in soul is kind of an unusual idea. If you are one with your soul, then you're functioning as a soul while you're living in the physical world. This is a tremendous accomplishment. If you can do it for 10 seconds a day, that's brilliant. If you can do it for 10 minutes a day, you're almost walking on water, honestly. And if you can do it for 10 hours a day, well, come on in here and you should be teaching. It's a difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing. What are souls like? Well, I'll try to describe a soul. First of all, Chief Tecumseh is describing a soul in his poem. But beyond that, because the poem is still a poem, right? It's not really like I am normally scientific and all that crap. But it has a science to it, so let me describe it. Unlike the human being has separated senses. That means we get a little bit of information from one sense, and then from another, and then from another. It sounds like it shouldn't be too hard, but the problem is there's this big thing called time. The time that separates the sense, the information from one sense and another sense is called the potential or an actual mistake. And as the energy is coming into us, which is what the information is, it comes in as energy, that energy is almost impossible to put together in a way. It's like a big jigsaw puzzle. Put it together in a way that is correct. So you get a little bit from this sense and a little bit from that sense, and before long another sense comes in. And the hardest senses to get good information from are the heart and crown chakras, the ones that tell us about God. Those are the most difficult sense of any, because those come from connection with our soul. Our individual soul, and only humans have individual souls, for any species of life below human. There are none. They don't have a connection directly with the soul because they have a group soul. They have instincts and other things that we have drives, but no instincts. Instincts are complex patterns of behavior, controlled by a soul that kind of just says, here, this is how you can behave so you can survive today. Okay, let's go. Lay an egg and cluck about it. I've seen a lot of chickens recently that are clucking because they lay eggs. They all do it. They think it's cool. And it lets the other chickens, encourages them to lay more eggs. It's sort of like a big egg-laying thing. But it's because they got this thing from their group soul, not because one chicken figured it out and the other ones just sort of adopt it. No. It's an instinct. Now, there are a few people that do that, too, but that's a whole other story. Okay, I know I can't be be funny tonight. It's too serious of a show. But anyway, I always throw in something humorous. Back to the story here. All right, so some energy is coming in, going out, different time, different space, and we're supposed to be able to put all this together like a great big jigsaw puzzle in virtually no time now to get any kind of accuracy in the information so we can create something called knowledge. Most of the time what we create is, I call it a kind of salad mixed together with a whole bunch of soupy dressing that is, the name for it is called illusion. It's not knowledge. It's like knowledge that doesn't mean anything because we can't get to what is called whole knowledge. We got the mixed up knowledge that's coming from mixed up information coming from senses. But you see, souls don't have senses that are separated. They don't. In their own realm, they function only with one sense together. Whatever number of senses they have, they're all joined together. Here, we as humans don't have that. We can create a one sense, but the only way to create it is to direct the energy out to others in service. This, because we're using energy now at the speed of light or enlightenment, we get enlightened, it's an interesting way. We bring together our senses once we enlighten them, boom, and they start to join, and now we don't have the salad anymore. We got the whole knowledge, all of it, at one time. Now, what does whole knowledge do? Well, it still doesn't reach the level that's really important. The knowledge now has to be used to create or co-create more of God. Then we can really serve others. When we create this co-creation with God, we are using something called consciousness. Consciousness supersedes. It's using the knowledge in a creative way for benefit of others and not for ourselves, because it's in service of us, and in ways that are greater than the knowledge ever included. It's creative. We actually get new knowledge out of it. Wow. And it's all accurate, meaning it has, in mental terms, truth. But you could only have truth that comes from knowledge that is given. And so that truth is called, guess what? It's called wisdom. Wisdom. When you give it, it's wise truth. It's got that wisdom on it. Wise. Wise is good. And if you give wisely, love wisdom is the name of that, you got yourself a real solution to the problem of joining the senses together. That's how you become your soul. That's how you do it. Now, there's a whole system. Of course, I've gone through this with many people, and I've taught it on the show. It's called spiritual discipline, all kinds of things. It's too technical for tonight, and I'm not going to get into it. But the bottom line is, the point is here. When we are looking at becoming one as a soul, that's the way we do it. And others that are trying to do the opposite against that and creating forces against us and against our centers from doing that are doing the opposite of enlightenment. They're creating darkness. And that is what we call evil. It's evil because its intention is to be destructive to life and to God's growth. Remember, we're here to help grow God because it made this decision that it didn't want to be some kind of being that didn't grow. It said, hey, this ain't fun. I don't want to grow through creation of life, but life has to be free. It has to be free to create, so there's got to be a few turkeys around, or more, who knows, who are going to go against this system. And God doesn't stop that. Only we can stop it. Only the growing part of God can stop it, because if the part of God that wasn't actively in the growing stage stopped it, there would be no freedom of thought. There would be no freedom. And freedom is the first component of God's own mind. Freedom. Love is the second. The two to go together, and they produce a spirit. It's a wonderful thing. But they can't. You can't have a system that is deterministic and controlled by God, because if you do, there's no growth. There's no need for human beings. Human life becomes meaningless. And the universe as we understand it doesn't make any sense anymore. I know a lot of people believe that in that kind of universe. Scientists do to some extent, in their confusion, because then they don't believe in God, because it's hard to believe in God if you believe in a deterministic universe. Or a chaotic one. There's something in between. Chaos is a universe in which there's no principles of God present. And determinism is a universe in which everything is determined. In between the two is God. And in Chief Tecumseh's poem, this poem is in between chaos and, we'll call it beauty, but it's in between chaos and ultimately a completely determined system. So this is in between and it's beauty. It's one of the virtues. It's one of the virtues that can be found in between. Some people call that the third road. Some people call it the third road. And I talked about that just a week or two ago. So you see, that these shows kind of make some sense because they kind of fit together. I might try and make them make sense. But they do sometimes. Even besides myself, they do. Amazingly. All right. So hopefully some of that is starting to sink in. Abuse no one and no thing. For abuse turns the wise ones to fools and robs the spirit of its vision. Well, I just told you what spirit is. Spirit is two sides of God's mind. And when spirit loses vision, God's mind no longer is able to see light. You could just see the spirit robs the spirit of its light or of its vision. Vision is just an allegorical statement of light. So spirit can lose light. Spirit can become quite dark and still exist. Even the most evil of beings has to have some spirit in it or it could not be alive. I know that sounds weird, but it's true. Some part of God's mind still exists, even in those forsaken beings. They're not God forsaken, they're forsaken by their own beings. But they don't have the vision. So abuse turns the wise ones to fools. How does it do that? And what is abuse? Well, we know about physical abuse. Physical abuse is when people use physical force, right? And they force other ones to do their bidding, do what they want, regardless of what the other ones want. That's different than force now. Force can stop an evil, can stop someone from being destructive. There's lots of ways you use force. But when you deal with it from an abuse level, abuse's purpose is to turn the other person dark. That's what its purpose is, in effect. And it turns wise ones to fools. Well, how does that happen? How can you be wise and suddenly become a fool and then be exercising abuse? It has to do with this conflict inside of us at this time. If your feelings become overpowering and they come from fixed desires, which means that your feelings aren't based upon love, but upon what you want. I want this, I want that. It almost always avows control and power over others, and I want to do this to me. And it turns the wise into fools, because in seeking the power instead of love, they no longer can see light. And when you don't see the light, no matter what you do, you're a fool. Because you're dissociating yourself with God. You're dissociating yourself with your soul, the one. And you're only becoming one with other people. Your life is one of literally a living hell. In the beginning, those who do this think they are great. They got everything they think they want. The power and control of others gives them materiality, gives them the ability to satiate their desires by getting their needs met through force from others. But that is nothing in comparison to the loss of one's soul and to becoming literally like an animal controlled by the group soul of evil. Yeah, you lose your soul, but you don't give up all of a soul. You have now a new soul that's just like the souls of animals and plants. Isn't that wonderful? And some minerals even. And you start behaving like an animal and eventually like a plant. Wow. But probably even worse than that. The meaning of existence diminishes regardless of how many desires are met and how much you think you have power and control over everybody else. The meaning of your own existence diminishes. But it's hidden. For years and decades and even centuries, these beings go on and on, believing that they have attained the great immortality of power and control, forcing others to do their bidding, and seemingly even staying alive for those periods of time or longer. And the results seem to them to be prophetic. They truly are godlike. I mean, after all, they can live long and longer than anything, and they can force others to do what they want. But the only thing they can't do, they can't be joyful. And ultimately, there is no such thing as bliss. The only thing they can have is transient, very transient, short-time feelings of excitement and a kind of, we'll call it, happiness. But very short-lived. And ultimately, eventually, it takes a long time, the worst suffering of any being that any being can ever sustain in its existence, because their consciousness erodes very, very slowly. And eventually, when their bodies can no longer maintain themselves, they start living out the rest of their life as what they really are in consciousness, which is usually a lower level life form. Many thousands, millions, sometimes a lifetime in that condition. Oh, it's an unbelievable horror. Now, it's not hell. No, no. It's their own self-creation of hell, if you want to call it that. Suffering is huge at the end of this thing. But during a lot of it, they don't suffer. They cause suffering in others. But they do. They do have fears. And they do eventually have a lack of meaning, no matter what they do. It may take a long time, but eventually their life becomes as meaningless as those that they have victimized or worse. So, abuse turns the wise ones to fools and robs the spirit of its vision, of its light. Spirit without light is the saddest of all. Terrible. So also, when it comes your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death, so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time. Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, to live their lives over again in a different way. Now, that's a complicated sentence, a long one, too. When it comes your time to die, what does this really mean? It means if you're afraid when you die, and unfortunately the majority of people are, they try to bargain for more time to live in a way different from they already live because they still haven't attained much meaning in their life. It's the meaninglessness of existence that leads people to believe that death is final and it is an oblivion of consciousness. But that is, nothing could be further from the truth. Now, I speak from experience, but some of you may only have this from having read or listened to people like me or whatever. Life goes on endlessly. There is no death of consciousness. Only bodies die. Senses wear out. But as we die from one dimension to the next, our consciousness increases, what I call the grace of God, and can help us recover. And eventually, we are going back to where we came from. We came from our soul. We are a piece of that soul. We cannot join our senses together the way the soul does, so we can't think and experience life the way the soul does. But as we gradually move back to the soul's existence, and this takes longer than the time we physically live here in years, but when we go back, we are moving back towards getting the senses more and more aligned together and unified. It doesn't happen, except for a few, in perfection in the mental world. And for most people, it happens in a semi-way, not complete, like half. And when that takes place, we fall asleep as the remaining element of human, but we're far more conscious than we were while we were physically alive. And we awaken to being our soul. It's no big deal. It's like you fall asleep one night, you wake up the next day, and you're this genius soul who you always have been. And you can remember what you've been doing while the human has been screwing up. Some people don't need to do that. They actually awaken in full consciousness. This is more rare. It can be done. And they just gradually meld with their soul. And it's no, and there's never, they don't fall asleep. They just do it. Now, when they do that, the odd thing about it is, now some people don't believe in this, is that they then choose to come back, but with a different personality. They help create that personality. And in the co-creation with their soul, in creating a new personality, they're doing it with hundreds of other souls, because the lifetimes of those souls are going to be connected together, and each has to be supportive in certain ways. And certain spiritual genes have to match certain physical genes of certain parents in certain places they're going to live in. It's so complicated that it's difficult to even fathom that we as humans can even participate in it. But we are so much more conscious and more intelligent at this level of our existence, we can do it. And yes, so reincarnation takes place, but not for personalities. The personality can only survive if it has lived as a soul. And it has to have done it in all three worlds for it to completely survive and go back to being a soul without any death of itself. The personality is subconscious to the self. The self never dies. It's fully conscious, and it never dies. Personality dies in its lack of consciousness unless it becomes fully conscious. Then it joins with the soul. And it's a beautiful thing. But this doesn't happen very often. So personalities suffer to some extent. They suffer from the fact that they're going to die. But we are different than the personality. We are ourself. And it's no more different than the senses or a body dying as far as the personality dying. Because it's not a conscious enough being to suffer very much. Personalities get to be about as conscious as we are when we're about 10 years old. And that's one that's pretty okay, not disordered in some way. That's not very old, and that's not very conscious. So it suffers a minimal level. We can help our personality to not do that by bringing it into higher levels of consciousness, and I teach how to do that and everything. So death is not a state of suffering. It's not a state of... There is no such thing as dying of consciousness. You're fully conscious immediately after the physical body is dead. You're in the etheric world in most cases for a brief time and then go on in the astral. You're fully conscious. Some people, yeah, they go into comas. They may lose some consciousness for a while, but when the body truly is dead, the physical body, they're fully conscious again. It could be brief periods. It's like when you sleep, you're not fully conscious then. So this is the point I'm trying to make. This fear of death is not only an illusion, which it certainly is, it's almost a disease in itself. The disease is what causes most of our bad behaviors, most of evil. Most people are seduced into evil because of fears of death. Most people are, if they're not seduced into evil, then they're at least, they grovel. And that's not a good thing. And if you think you're a groveler, stop it. Be a fully conscious being. Be a co-creator with God and stop being a groveler. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And why do people want more time to live their lives over again in a different way? I love that statement. Because people believe if they could have just lived in some way differently, they could still have a meaning in their life, and then they wouldn't be afraid. Meaning is created by how much you serve others. That's what souls do. Souls create meaning in life. It's the hidden meaning of a soul. And that's what's missing from most people's lives. They can get meaning from living as a human being, but it's transient. Yeah, well, for hours or a few days. The meaning created by a soul lasts as long as the consciousness does, which is forever. That's the hidden meaning. And for those of you who are familiar with my textbook, Life's Hidden Meaning, the word hidden is inside the eye on the cover. That is the meaning of a soul. Yeah. Wow. That's a real interesting piece in itself. Consider. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home. What is that about? Why would we want to sing our death song and die like a hero going home? Because the way you do that, you sing, as I said earlier, by giving to others. And the death song is to be an example to others of being brave of heart and one in soul. When you become that example, you truly die like a hero going home. And people begin, even if they don't understand it, they begin to overcome their own fear. That's what heroes do. Heroes help others to overcome their fear of death. How profound that statement is. How did this chief get that? Wow. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home. telling you how to do it. What a brilliant, brilliant statement. Well, what about now? How does this fit into this age that we are facing? Well, for some of us, we may have great potential to live more here. But sometimes the very best you can do, if for reasons that are literally beyond your control, the best you can do is to sing your death song, and then others see you as a hero going home. And that helps them. And that's a big deal. Being an example of being a soul is just as important as anything else that someone can do while they're physically alive. And I know everybody thinks, oh, well, I could go teach this, or I can go do that, or there's so many things I can do. But beingness is greater than doingness under some circumstances, especially if you are being trounced by an army of evil. Then die like a hero going home, and you will become the example of the soul, the living soul here. And such death is not so terrible. It's a great thing. It's why those that do this, we call heroes. Not all heroes have to die to be a hero. But all heroes have to face death without fear to be a hero. The death may have been of their reputation. The death may have been of their physical existence. The death may have been of the people and things they love. The death may have been anything in existence. But if they did so in a fearless state, in service to others, we see them as a hero. And that's the only way that I choose to die. And it may be the only way that you can choose to die if you can overcome the fear of death. And you enjoy the death long before it may actually happen. As soon as you reach the fearless position, you enjoy all the benefits of that in yourself and to some people who can see you, to others, until that time comes when you die. It doesn't just happen when you die. And those who do the reverse suffer all the time before they die. The fear of death. And the loss of all that greatness that is theirs to have. They can have it. They actually could, in any moment, truly enjoy it and reach a state of bliss. But they rob it from themselves. And of course, they aren't a living example of it for others. So it's like a contagion in a sense. Their fear of death is catching and destructive to others. If you have it, consider it a disease that you have to overcome. Not for your sake, but for the sake of all that you come in contact with and should be serving. Chief Tecumseh was a brilliant, serving, and amazing, enlightened being. This very short poem shows us that in so few words, so much can be said, that in 2 hours, you can barely explain its true meaning. I will say a few words here of practicality. You know, I have been teaching this for years now. This is the time, this is the week, to be preparing, if you haven't already, and of course I hope you have, for a time in which there may be rationing, loss of various things people consider important to physical survival. You should stock up on those things if you're physically capable of doing such and have some means to do it. You should keep more than just for yourself, but enough for some others as well. You should be in communication with other people about what's taking place in the world and why this is an important time to both be alive and how dying in this time may be just as important death. You need to also recognize that each person is going to be making a choice, oddly, of what side they're going to be on, because that's the test. Some people will do it here in the United States by simply either voting or not voting, and who they vote for will determine their path. Even if that person doesn't win, it will determine their path, one way or the other. I want you to think very deeply about that statement. If you're thinking of not voting at all, or if you're thinking of voting one way or the other, think very deeply about how I just said that. There's a whole series of events that are almost certain to take place. These events, unfortunately, will affect almost everybody in this world. The reason for that is that Earth was set up as an experiment of the worst kind of evil, a kind that is more mental. One part of it we'll call it spin by today's standards. It's really propaganda. And it has been around gradually growing for hundreds of years. But it has, in the last century, taken its greatest step forward, we'll call it, if you want to call it that. It's a form of evil that attempts to connect more strongly the mental with the astral and to make this common monastic connection much stronger so that evil could take over the world. There have been many times it's been used over ages, but never like it is today. This is the time to see that and to do something that can be as much as possible helpful. Convince others of what's going on if you can. Have them listen to the show. Maybe it'll help if you think. Better that you talk to them because you're closer. I'm just the guy over the radio. They haven't heard me before. I'm the crazy guy over the radio, probably. You have an investment with many people. And that investment is in being able to help them through love and giving to them in wise ways, help them to create truth in their mind. Truth clears out all of the illusion if it's really strong enough. When the illusion in the mind is gone, even though there's still sensual feeling desires in the astral nature, evil cannot win in this world. It needs the monastic or mental element here. This is the experiment. The experiment is, can human beings stop it? If it can't, if they can't, Earth's days are very limited. Probably in centuries at most, maybe in tens of years. Somewhere between those two numbers. That's not very long, for as long as Earth has existed. Does that mean that Earth is just going to suddenly disappear? No, it just means that humans will. But Earth will maybe gradually fade away. Humans are necessary in order for life to continue to grow. You can't skip the human kingdom. It's absolutely necessary. Whether we love ourselves or hate ourselves, we are necessary. And humans are the only part of life that can create evil. Animals can be subjected to and be forced to become part of evil, but they don't create it. Humans create it. The next kingdom beyond humans, which are called freed or enlightened or liberated souls, they are free from evil. Only humans are truly evil. This experiment, our souls came to this world to participate in. I know it's a rough idea that we would come to such an outlandish place. There's very few planets that have this experiment or anything like this kind of evil. Look at our history if you don't think this planet is truly experimenting in evil. And we are trying because we wanted to. Some of the souls that got caught up in the evil, their personalities did, regret it. The souls regret it, but they can't do anything about it because just like God, the soul has to allow the human with its personality to be free. Okay, let me one more time read this poem to you. Are you ready? The Tecumseh poem. So live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart. Trouble no one about their religion. Respect others in their view and demand that they respect yours. Love your life. Perfect your life. Beautify all things in your life. Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. Prepare a noble death song for the day when you go over the great divide. Always give a word or a sign of salute when meeting or passing a friend, even a stranger, when in a lonely place. Show respect to all people and grovel to none. When you arise in the morning, give thanks for the food and for the joy of living. If you see no reason for giving thanks, the fault lies only in yourself. Abuse no one and no thing, for abuse turns the wise ones to fools and robs the spirit of its vision. When it comes your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death, so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives over again in a different way. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home. Written by Chief Tecumseh. I hope tonight's show has been a show with meaning and one that has created some difference for those who have heard it. Let us all join together and pray that the outcome of this test will truly create more of God. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.